So we're sitting here in the middle of May 2026, and consumer sentiment has basically hit rock bottom.
Yeah, it really has. It's a tough environment out there.
Right. And you look at the macro picture, I mean, inflation just reaccelerated, construction materials are getting significantly more expensive, and bank lending for commercial real estate has, well, it's virtually frozen.
Completely frozen in a lot of places, honestly.
Exactly. So, by all traditional laws of economics, retail real estate should be collapsing under that immense pressure. But if you look closely at Dallas-Fort Worth right now, there's this massive, I mean, 7 million square foot construction boom happening, and institutional capital is just pouring in.
It's incredible to watch. It really is.
It is. So, today we're going to figure out why the traditional rules seem, completely broken. Welcome to this special deep dive brought to you by Eureka Business Group, which is, of course, your authority for commercial real estate brokerage in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, specializing in retail.
Happy to be here.
We are going to cut straight through the noise of this incredibly dense market to find your edge. We want you, the listener, to understand exactly what is happening under the hood of the retail sector, why certain properties are thriving while the middle kind of hollows out, and why your backyard here in DFW is the undisputed epicenter of U.S. retail real estate.
Yeah, and the thing is, the current landscape really requires us to completely discard our pre-2020 assumptions about how retail reacts to financial stress.
Right, because the old playbook just doesn't work anymore.
Exactly. We're looking at an environment that is simultaneously intensely restrictive and highly lucrative. It just depends entirely on what side of the ledger your specific asset sits on.
I want to start right there, actually, with that restrictive side, because the broader economic weather report we're dealing with is just brutal. I mean, look at the April Consumer Price Index. It reaccelerated to 3.8% year over year.
Which nobody wanted to see.
No, absolutely not. But for developers, the real nightmare is the Producer Price Index, which just jumped 6.0%.
Yeah, that PPI jump is a massive hurdle.
And when you break that down into actual building materials, construction costs are up 6.2% through April. We're seeing, climbing energy costs, expensive steel and lumber prices that are actively being impacted by these new tariffs.
Right.
So when a developer builds a pro forma for a new shopping center, a 6.2% jump in materials essentially vaporizes their contingency budget overnight.
It does. It completely alters the pricing expectations across the entire development life cycle. Because when developers face those kinds of sudden, unavoidable cost spikes for raw materials, they are forced into a corner.
Yeah, they really don't have a lot of options there.
No, they don't. They basically either have to significantly raise their target rental rates
Yeah.
to justify the project, which of course risks pricing up potential tenants, or they just have to shelve marginal projects entirely.
Which we're seeing a lot of.
Exactly. And when you combine that input inflation with the elevated financing costs we are dealing with, it acts as this massive filter. Only the most exceptionally underwritten projects, the ones backed by top-tier credit tenants, are actually making it out of the ground.
But see, this is where I'm struggling to reconcile the numbers because I look at this high inflation and I look at the cost of debt, right? Then I look at consumer sentiment, which hit a record low of 48.2 in early May. I mean, consumers are telling surveyors they feel terrible about the economy and their personal finances.
Right, they're highly pessimistic.
Right. So if money is this expensive, building costs are at a premium, and shoppers are that pessimistic, why hasn't the floor fallen out of the commercial retail sector?
Well, the mechanism keeping the floor intact is a concept we can basically define as structural scarcity.
Structural scarcity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So retail is surviving this intense macro squeeze, not because consumers are spending wildly, but because physical space is almost completely unavailable. I mean, the U.S. retail sector actually started 2026 with a negative net absorption of 4.4 million square feet.
Wait, negative 4.4 million?
Yes. Tenants physically gave back more space than they leased across the board. Now, in a normal, historically balanced market, negative net absorption of that magnitude would cause vacancy rates to spike immediately.
But the vacancy rate isn't spiking. I mean, it's holding incredibly steady at 4.4% nationally.
Right.
So how do we absorb a negative 4.4 million square foot hit without that vacancy needle even moving?
Because the supply side of the equation has essentially been turned off, we're just not building enough new supply to even move that needle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Bank construction lending has now retreated for a sixth straight quarter. The regional banks, which historically serve as the primary engine for, ground-up commercial real estate lending, they're dealing with strict Federal Reserve deposit requirements and immense regulatory scrutiny, regarding their existing commercial real estate exposure.
Right. The regulators are really watching them.
Exactly. So they cannot aggressively fund new construction, which means existing retail centers have virtually zero new competition coming online in their immediate submarkets.
Okay. But if the regional banks are sitting on their hands, how are active deals getting financed? Because buildings are still trading and some projects are still breaking ground, where is the capital coming from to keep the gears turning?
So alternative lenders have aggressively seized the opportunity created by that regional banking retreat. We're talking about private debt funds, mortgage real estate investment trusts, and life insurance companies.
Ah, okay. The private market stepping in.
Yeah. These institutions captured over 53% of all non-agency commercial real estate loan volume in the first quarter of 2026.
Over half. That's huge.
It is huge. And unlike heavily regulated regional banks, private debt funds have flexible capital pools. They can step in to fund higher yield transitional deals or value add acquisitions. I mean, they demand a premium, obviously.
Sure, they want their return.
Right. But they provide the liquidity necessary for investors to refinance or acquire assets despite the traditional lending freeze.
So the market isn't collapsing because the absolute scarcity of space acts as this reinforced floor, and private credit is providing just enough oxygen to keep transactions flowing.
Exactly.
But, you know, the moment you look at individual asset classes within retail, you realize this survival isn't universal at all. We are really looking at a massive, brutal divide.
We are. We are definitely operating in the era of the great retail bifurcation. It's really no longer useful to talk about, you know, the retail market as a single entity, because there are two entirely different realities playing out simultaneously. Institutional capital is aggressively chasing necessity-based and grocery-anchored retail. They're treating it almost like a bond equivalent in terms of safety.
And Continental Realty Corporation just provided the perfect blueprint for what that looks like, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. They acquired a 14-property shopping center portfolio totaling more than 2 million square feet for roughly $200 million. And these are not flashy high street luxury flagships.
No, not at all.
These are necessity centers in secondary markets anchored by tenants like, you know, Kroger, Hobby Lobby, Ross, and Academy Sports.
And the capitalization rates on deals like that tell the real story here. For strong grocery-anchored centers, cap rates are actually compressing, trading near or even below 6.5%.
Wow, below 6.5 in this environment.
Yeah. In a high interest rate environment, accepting a 6.5% initial yield is a distinctly defensive posture. Institutional investors are willing to accept a slightly lower initial return because they view grocery-anchored centers as deeply insulated from inflation.
That makes sense.
Right. Regardless of how terrible consumer sentiment becomes, the local population still has to buy milk, bread, and discounted everyday goods.
But let's look at the other side of this reality, because the middle of the market is completely falling out. The distress among mid-tier discretionary specialty chains is severe right now.
It's really tough out there for them.
Yeah, I mean, Saks Global Enterprises and over 100 affiliated debtors filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And Macy's extended its massive 150-store closure program all the way through 2028. We are really watching the traditional mid-market department store model get systematically dismantled.
We are. And that dismantling creates these highly visible ghost ships in local submarkets. The traditional Class B and C enclosed mall, which relied entirely on those mid-tier discretionary department stores to drive foot traffic, they simply cannot justify their footprint anymore.
There's actually an example in New Jersey that illustrates this divide better than any spreadsheet ever could. You have two malls separated by just 4 miles.
Oh, the Livingston and Short Hills comparison.
What? Yes. On one side of town, you have the Livingston Mall. It's a classic 1972 vintage property. Macy's left, the inline tenants basically vanished, and it feels like this gloomy time capsule where you might walk past the remnants of an abandoned Sparrow.
Right, it's completely dead.
Exactly. And the local government is now targeting it for partial demolition and residential redevelopment. Hmm. But then, 4 miles down the exact same road, you have the mall at Short Hills.
And it's a completely different world.
Totally different. It's owned by Simon, heavily features luxury brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Rolex, and it boasts the absolute highest sales per square foot of any shopping center in the entire state. I mean, good luck finding a parking spot there on a Tuesday afternoon.
And you know, that 4 mile stretch is the entire national narrative condensed into a single zip code.
It really is.
The top tier, Class A experiential and luxury retail is thriving. The everyday, necessity-based grocery retail is thriving.
Yeah.
Everything sitting between those two points is fighting for survival or being actively targeted for alternative use conversions.
It's the ultimate barbell reality. If you visualize the retail landscape as a weightlifter's barbell, all the heavy institutional capital, the foot traffic, and the successful yield are concentrated at the extreme outer ends.
Right, the two weights on the ends.
Yeah. On the left side, you have your absolute daily necessities. On the right side, you have ultra-high-end luxury and highly curated experiences. The long bar in the middle representing discretionary, mid-tier, average retail is just bending and snapping under the weight of inflation and shifting consumer habits.
And if we accept that the two ends of the barbell are the only safe havens, we have to examine what those surviving physical stores are actually doing inside their four walls. Because surviving in an inflationary environment with high rent requires a completely different operational model than we saw, say, 10 years ago.
Physical spaces are no longer just passive showrooms, right?
Exactly. This is a massive shift. A physical store used to be a place where a customer walked in, browsed a shelf, paid a cashier, and left. Now, these surviving retailers are evolving their stores into hybrid fulfillment hubs.
Hybrid fulfillment hubs?
Yes. The physical retail box is becoming a highly critical, localized node in a technology-driven supply chain.
So this functional evolution fundamentally alters site selection and interior architecture. I mean, retailers are mitigating the high costs of real estate by forcing their physical footprints to serve multiple operational purposes simultaneously.
That's exactly it.
A landlord looking to lease to a winning tenant today has to completely redesign their physical asset to support heavy technology integration. But let's break down the mechanics of that, because it sounds great in theory, but what does a hybrid fulfillment hub actually look like when you walk through the doors of a newly leased space?
Well, the floor plan itself is actually inverted. We are seeing retailers dedicate significantly more back-of-house square footage specifically for micro-fulfillment.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. This is where employees or automated sorting systems are processing buy online, pick up in store orders, and managing localized reverse logistics.
Meaning they're handling online returns right there at the neighborhood center rather than shipping them back to a regional warehouse.
Precisely. And in the front of the house, the physical environment is highly data instrumented.
And by data instrumented, we are talking about those computer vision-driven checkout zones. This is fascinating to me because it isn't just a standard security camera system. It requires an entirely different structural approach.
Oh, yeah. It's way beyond standard security.
Retailers are installing dense grid arrays in the ceilings with specialized cameras that track the geometry of items as customers pull them off shelves, which effectively eliminates the traditional checkout line.
And implementing that level of computer vision requires massive on-site edge computing power. You need server racks in the back room processing that visual data in real time.
Right.
This allows retailers to track dwell time, optimize merchandising pathways, and drastically reduce labor costs at the register. The upfront capital expenditure is high, but retailers who are early adopters of AI and physical store technology are projected to earn 3 times more in profit.
3 times more? That's a massive incentive. But this completely changes the dynamic between tenant and landlord. If the tenant is essentially turning their 5,000 square foot retail box into a high-tech data center and micro warehouse, the lease structure has to reflect that. Are landlords now fundamentally required to operate as technology infrastructure providers?
Basically, yes. The core responsibility of the retail landlord has permanently expanded. Providing four walls, a waterproof roof, and a functioning HVAC unit is no longer sufficient to secure a premium credit tenant.
Right. That used to be the bare minimum.
Yeah. And now, power connectivity and robust data infrastructure are primary underwriting inputs for site selection.
Because if a tenant wants to install AI-driven checkout servers and automated back-of-house sorting conveyors, they need serious high-voltage power.
Precisely. If a landlord cannot typically guarantee the electrical load capacity required to run those systems without browning out the rest of the shopping center, that landlord will lose the lease. The physical real estate must seamlessly and invisibly support the retailer's digital ecosystem. Landlords who preemptively upgrade their power infrastructure and offer flexible demising walls to accommodate changing front-to-back-of-house ratios, they're the ones commanding premium rents.
So, if necessity-based, highly tech-enabled retail is the formula for survival, the most urgent question for anyone listening is where this capital is actually being deployed. We know national supply is severely constrained, but the data points directly to Texas as the ultimate exception to that rule.
Oh, the sheer concentration of development and transactional velocity in Texas, and specifically within the Dallas-Fort Worth market, it just dwarfs the rest of the country.
And this is exactly why having boots on the ground with a firm like Eureka Business Group is critical right now. You are operating in the most important market in the country. Texas metros are leading the entire nation in retail construction.
By a wide margin.
Yeah. Dallas alone has a sprawling 7 million square foot retail construction pipeline. That single metro area accounts for 10% of the entire national pipeline.
10%. Just think about that.
It's staggering. But the most important metric isn't just what is being built, it's the absorption. Nearly 5 million square feet of that 7 million is already fully pre-leased before the doors even open.
And a pre-leasing figure of that magnitude removes the speculative risk from the equation. Developers are not breaking ground on a hope and a prayer here.
Right.
Retail tenants know there is zero existing quality space available in DFW due to the structural scarcity we discussed earlier.
Mm.
So they're aggressively signing leases on blueprints just to ensure they don't miss out on the population growth.
Let's look at the mechanics of the specific deals moving through DFW right now to see how different capital stacks are playing this market. Dallas-based Younger Partners just acquired a 375,000 square foot, three-center retail portfolio in Fort Worth for $113.7 million.
The financing behind that transaction is actually highly revealing.
How so?
Well, the deal was financed using a life insurance company loan. Life insurance companies possess massive pools of capital, but they operate with a very specific mandate.
Right, they need safety.
Exactly. They need long-term, highly reliable, steady yield to match their decades-long payout liabilities. The fact that Life Insurance Capital is comfortable deploying nine-figure sums into Fort Worth retail tells you they view the long-term cash flow of DFW necessity retail as secure as a corporate bond.
That is a huge vote of confidence. And we are also seeing significant value-add movement. Disney Investment Group brokered the recapitalization of Custer Park, which is a Kroger shadow-anchored center in Plano. They brought in Cobalt Investment Company and MCP Ventures.
Right.
And in a high interest rate environment, a recapitalization is a highly strategic move. It allows the current ownership to reset the capital stack and bring in fresh equity, specifically to fund full renovations without having to sell the asset outright in a really difficult lending environment.
It's very smart.
Yeah. And on the corporate side, Target just announced that Texas will receive the absolute largest state share of its massive nationwide store remodel program, upgrading their physical footprints to handle exactly the kind of omni-channel fulfillment we just detailed.
And you know, the local brokerage community is also physically scaling up to handle this immense volume.
You see that perfectly with the recent merger of Due West Realty and DBA Commercial Real Estate to form Due West. This single firm now leases over 500 properties, totaling more than 10 million square feet, with 3.5 million square feet of managed retail under one roof.
That's massive consolidation.
It is. Brokerages do not consolidate and scale to that degree unless they are aggressively preparing for a sustained, massive wave of retail and land transaction demand.
Absolutely. And to fully understand why this localized boom is happening in DFW, we really have to connect it back to the overarching macroeconomic environment, specifically the housing lock-in effect.
Ah, yeah, the mortgage trap.
Exactly. Nationally, household mobility has hit a record low. Americans are fundamentally trapped in their current homes because of affordability pressures and high mortgage rates. A family is not going to surrender a historically low 3% mortgage to move across the country and take on a 7% mortgage unless forced by severe life circumstances.
So the national housing market is essentially frozen in place.
But when you look at the demographic data for Dallas-Fort Worth, the engine is still roaring. DFW total employment now exceeds 4.35 million jobs, and the year-over-year growth drastically outpaces the national average.
Wow.
Yeah, the Metroplex continues to lead the nation in absolute net migration. We have this unique scenario where the existing population cannot easily move away due to the mortgage lock-in effect, while massive corporate-driven job growth is simultaneously pulling hundreds of thousands of new residents into the area every year.
And all of those people, whether they are renting a brand new apartment in Frisco or locked into a house they bought 10 years ago in Arlington, they require daily physical services.
They demand a massive baseline of goods. They need grocery stores, urgent care clinics, veterinary offices, fitness centers, and quick service restaurants.
Things you can't just download.
Right. This sticky, rapidly expanding population creates an incredibly durable, undeniable bedrock for necessity-based retail investment. You cannot service a population boom of this magnitude entirely through e-commerce. It demands highly localized, physical retail footprints.
Which brings us to the ultimate takeaway for your portfolio. If you are an investor or developer trying to navigate a high-velocity market where 10% of the nation's retail is currently being built, you simply cannot rely on national averages.
No, you really can't.
A spreadsheet in New York isn't going to tell you the difference in foot traffic patterns between a center in Plano versus one in Fort Worth. You need a team actively on the ground, like Eureka Business Group, who intimately understands which specific submarkets are primed for value-add renovations, and who knows exactly what high-voltage infrastructure these new tech-enabled tenants are demanding in their lease negotiations.
Because granular, localized knowledge is really the only effective way to price risk and identify mispriced assets in a market moving at this velocity.
We have covered a tremendous amount of ground today. We started by looking at a macro environment that is actively hostile to commercial real estate, featuring high inflation, severe construction costs, and frozen traditional debt markets.
Yep.
But rather than collapsing, the retail sector adapted through structural scarcity. The necessity-based, grocery-anchored, tech-forward assets are surviving and thriving because there is simply no new space to compete with them. And because of unprecedented population stickiness and job growth, Dallas-Fort Worth has cemented itself as the undisputed heavyweight champion of this retail resilience.
The dynamics we've explored really provide a clear roadmap for the current cycle. But, you know, there's one final forward-looking variable hidden in this data that is about to introduce a massive new layer of complexity to commercial real estate development.
Oh, what's that?
Well, we discussed how modern AI-enabled retail requires intense electrical infrastructure, right?
Right. The power needs are huge.
Moving forward, retail developers are no longer just competing with other developers for prime dirt. They are about to enter a fierce existential battle for the power grid itself.
Wait, because they are suddenly competing against hyperscale AI data centers.
Exactly. As artificial intelligence infrastructure demands accelerate, developers are rushing to build massive data centers in the exact same power-rich Sunbelt markets that are driving our retail growth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Cyrusone just lined up a $1 billion loan to construct two massive data centers right here in Allen, Texas. These hyperscale facilities consume gigawatt-scale grid capacity.
Mm-hmm.
They draw an unfathomable amount of electricity.
So retail developers aren't just in a bidding war for land anymore. They're essentially in a knife fight with AI companies over the extension cord.
That's a great way to put it. Power constraints are actively reshaping commercial site selection across the board. Industrial and data center developers are fighting local municipalities and utility providers for guaranteed power allocations. So for a retail investor or developer analyzing a new site in the coming years, the primary question will no longer simply be about demographic rings and traffic counts.
It's going to be about the grid.
The very first question must be, will there be enough actual utility power left at the local substation to turn the lights on at a new shopping center? Or has a billion-dollar AI data center down the road already legally claimed all the available capacity?
That is a stunning paradigm shift. The primary constraint on your next development might not be interest rates or inflation, but the actual electricity required to keep the doors open. We want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive brought to you by Eureka Business Group. We encourage you to use these insights, understand the macro pressures, leverage the unprecedented momentum here in DFW, and find your edge in the commercial real estate market.